You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Hello and welcome to the Fish Nerds, the show about fishing and eating fish, the show that is always interesting, usually funny, and mostly true. I'm Dave Stewart, host of the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Podcast and the Fly Tying Mentor.
Wow. Hey, thanks, Dave. And I'm Clay Groves, Chief Executive Fish Nerd, Licensed Fishing Guide, and award-winning public speaker. I love saying that. So weird. Anyway, such a fun show. As you heard, I got Dave Stewart, who's the host of the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Podcast. And my apologies to Rich Collins, who is our fly fishing correspondent, for cheating on him this week. But we're happy to have you. Welcome. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks.
All right. So today on the show, we'll get into Dave in a second, so hang tight just a minute here because we got so much going on. Today on the show, as you heard, Dave Stewart from the Wet Fly Swing Podcast is here. When you get done listening to the show, go to wetflyswing.com and check out all the work over there, or skip all that. Go to Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the Wet Fly Swing podcast. You'll enjoy it. And I don't fly fish much, and I like it anyway. We also have an interview with George Cannon about surviving prostate cancer and how it's informed his deep sea fishing in his life. He's an old guy, and I don't think he ever heard a podcast in his life until today. My mom came to visit this weekend, and we took her fishing. We recorded live audio on the fishing pontoon boat while she outfished everybody, so that'll be fun. Hugo Medeiros, our cooking correspondent, is here with a great or crappy recipe. Fish Guy Josh is here with another edition of Fish Guy Follows. And, of course, we have the news. Wow, action-packed show tonight. But since, Dave, you're here, I mean, before we go too much deeper, we should probably get to know you a little bit. Dave, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. That was awesome. This is it's a little surreal to be on the show, I guess, turning the mic here. So this is good stuff.
It's a fun time. And first of all, before we get too deep into other things, give us the elevator pitch of the Wet Fly Swing Podcast. Why do you do it? What the hell is it?
Yep. So it is all fly fishing all the time. I basically interview a new expert guest in fly fishing from around the country, around the world. And the first 30 episodes are all steelhead. So if you're into steelhead fly fishing, want to learn about it, I've got some amazing shows there.
I can't even believe there's 30 different ways to catch steelhead. I mean, it's crazy.
Well,
don't you just throw a spoon and reel them in?
That's what you'd think. But yeah, I've got some pretty nerdy guests, and one guy I love to throw out he talked about summer steelhead, which is more of a kind of a West Coast thing. But I mean, he just nerded out on catching summer steelhead in the daylight hours.
Had a guy on, I think it was the most recent show, who was catching them out in Seattle, in West Seattle.
Yep.
Right downtown. Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting.
Yep. And I've interviewed a fly fisher, John Gierick.
Oh, wow.
And he was talking about whenever he goes steelhead fishing and they're too far away to cast to, he has a friend who throws big spoons. And they chase the spoons in to close enough where he can cast his fly to them.
That's awesome.
The two together. So a really interesting thing. And I love that kind of stuff. So steelhead, that's insane. And we don't have steelhead out here in New Hampshire.
All right.
Where do you live?
So in Oregon. Yeah.
You're in Oregon. Okay.
Yep.
Yep. I had you pegged as a New Yorker.
Well, it's funny because I've had some guests from all over the country. So I've had some folks talk about New York and all the Great Lakes steelhead stuff. But now I'm in the trout season, season two of trout. So I'm everywhere now. I've had a bunch of people talking about trout fishing all over the country as well.
So you did 30 episodes just on steelhead. And just real quick for the fly guys out there, your favorite steelhead technique?
The wet fly swing, that's kind of the, the name of the,
oh, that's a thing.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of a, it's a little bit of a throwback, like, you know, but yeah, the wet fly swing is basically swinging flies, the wet fly swing, and you basically downstream and across. It's probably the simplest way to swing to catch steelhead. Just cast it out and let the fly swing.
So you did 30 episodes on steelhead fishing, and now you're diversifying a little bit. Why is that?
So I just, I felt like, I don't know, I guess maybe I was going to run out of information. I just wanted to cover everything. I kind of got into it and I felt like there's so many great people out there. I wanted to just touch on everything in fly fishing. And I felt like I wasn't quitting at 50 episodes. I'm just going to go forever. So why not just cover it all?
Yeah. And when did you start fly fishing?
I started pretty much, about as young, I think, whatever it was, 10, 8. My dad had a fly shop. So I grew up around a fly shop, and I've been doing it pretty much my whole life. I threw spinners as a kid and stuff, but yep, pretty much since I can remember, I've been fishing.
Well, that's fantastic. And you've interviewed some huge names on your show in the fly fishing world. You want to do some name dropping?
Tell me. Yeah. I wish I could just point to I always point to one episode 11 because Tom Larimer, he's a pretty big name. He's the, guy running basically G Loomis kind of on their side.
That's how you say it?
G Loomis? Yeah.
It's Gloomis. I'm like, man, what a dreary name for a company. Like, who wants to fish with a Gloomis?
No, totally. No idea. Yeah, G Loomis. Yeah, that's one of our companies out here in our area. But, that was a good one. There's so many. I mean, I had Jim Teamy on episode 5. He's an old timer. I had April Vokey, who's a big, female fly fisher.
I heard that one. And yeah. I think I congratulated you on that interview. I was like, what? No way. You got her? And she's like, one. She's like one of the top podcasters in iTunes for our
show. Yep, exactly.
So amazing. People haven't heard her show. She does a really good job, and she's fabulous at fishing.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. They must have got some big downloads for that one, right? Putting her name in the title?
That was, that was probably one of my biggest. Yeah, it's one of those things where the other big one was I had a guy named Deck Hogan, who's one of the biggest names in steelhead as well, in episode 20. And it's kind of a different episode. He actually, half of the show was him talking about how his publisher kind of screwed him a little bit, I guess is the best way to say it.
Writers will do that.
Yeah. So it was this kind of thing. So I got a bunch of downloads because people just wanted to hear that story, but it was a good episode, and I'm pretty proud of everything I've done, and I'm excited to do the next one.
So I'm a new at fly fishing. I say new, I've been doing it for 20 years, but about once a year for 20 years. I'm having trouble getting addicted to it. Now it took me this year. I caught my very first brook trout on a fly.
Nice.
Yeah. And it was super fun. I had a great time doing it. But I still don't feel like I could be, it's more effective than spin casting. So for those of us who have trouble with connecting with it, what is it? Like, why?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know what it is? It's like, and you can go to the April Vokey episode and listen to that one and listen to her talk about it, because I love to dig into this stuff too with my guests. And she started fishing with spinners, and a lot of people do, they start with spinners, they start with whatever. And slowly, the way she put it is you slowly, not everybody, but you get to a point where you've caught so many fish that it's not like it's easy, but you're just ready for like a new challenge.
I knew it. And I've always said this, fly fishers don't like catching fish. They want it to be hard. You take something that's so easy. Catching fish is the easiest thing, and let's make it really complicated. Let's make it hard. And it's super nerdy. I mean, there really is not much nerdier than a fly guy.
I know. I
mean, you talk about, you get your entomology books out. That's the Pernidae stonefly. And then you give them all crazy names, and there you go.
Exactly.
You tie your own flies. You do, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you're starting doing this tutoring thing where you're having these online courses for fly tying. I should take it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's a little course, the Fly Tying Mentor. It's basically a subscription box where I just send out all the fly materials you need. It's for the first part is just like a beginner course. So if you've never tied flies before and you want to get into it, I basically send you out a box every month and you get all the materials and flies and you learn how to, and a video instruction kind of stuff.
We were talking off air. I didn't quite catch that piece. Mm-hmm. So it's like a subscription program where you mail the box to my house of all the materials.
All the materials.
Oh, see, it's funny. There was another fly box company who mailed us boxes, and by their title, I thought that's what they did. And instead, they gave us just flies and books. And now you're onto something.
Yep.
I think you're really onto something. I misunderstood you before.
Okay.
And so that's magical. So then mm-hmm. you get the box, then you go on the YouTubes and you watch.
So these are all separate. These are all in my, basically under Vimeo. They're kind of private courses. So it's mm-hmm. You go through the normal kind of paywall Vimeo thing.
Yep.
You open it up to all your stuff and your course. And there's going to be, there's a group and there's just the whole, a little bit of coaching where needed. And I'm kind of testing the waters to see how much, and I'm kind of doing a 2-month launch here. So I'm trying to get feedback from everybody as I go to make sure it's perfect for what people need.
Yeah. So let's say I want to subscribe. Is that open for subscription yet, or are you not quite there yet?
Yep, it's ready to go. Just go to flytyingmentor.com, and it's right there. You just click on, and basically you can sign up, and all you're doing is saying you want to get emails every week to hear what's going on up to the launch until when I launch it, which will be probably in a couple months.
Flytyingmentor.com.
Yep.
Okay, I'll put that in the show notes so people can click through and get in there. This sounds great because my daughter ties flies for me. Like she's always, we go to the town, the state fair, and there's always a fly guy there tying flies, and she ties me a new woolly bugger every year. And I put it in my hat because I don't think they catch fish, but it looks really cool in my hat. So I stick it.
They do. The woolly bugger is the greatest fly.
That's what they say. So we got, I put out on Facebook this morning that you were going to be on the show, and lo and behold, we got a lot of words here. A lot of people had some comments about you coming on this show. You want to go through some of them with me?
Sure.
All right. So Troutman Orf, Ott, I don't ask that. Troutman Ott. His name is Steve in real life. I don't know what the hell his moniker names. But he owns a fly shop in North Conway, New Hampshire. One of the only two fly shops in the whole state now.
Wow.
They're almost extinct. And he wrote the words, I don't know what this means, Lysen ring lift. Mm-hmm. .. thoughts. What does that mean?
Yeah. And so basically it's just with nymph fishing, it's a type, and it's going to be hard to explain the whole thing, but it's a way to basically get your fly down to the fish at the right level and kind of control your rod lift. That's all it's saying. So the best way to put it is I do have an episode coming up with Devin Olson, who's a big Euro nympher, and those guys are probably the best at doing this sort of technique where you basically control your nymph so it's at the exact correct level. And that's essentially what it is. So you're not using an indicator where the thing's floating under an indicator. You're just basically holding your rod tip up or down to get that perfect drift. And that's what I do. And I'm not as big of a nymph fisher as some of these folks who are like, the Euro nymphing is a science. I mean, these guys are just killing it. But I usually don't use indicators, and I'm kind of a tight line using this sort of same lift technique. And
I've done better with Tenkara than anything because I don't have to cast. I just drop it in there and catch fish.
Exactly.
Which is great for like crappies and panfish and that sort of thing. You don't have to cast to those things.
Tenkaras, cool. Yeah.
So by the way, in New Hampshire, Tenkara is not fly fishing by law.
Really?
You cannot, in a fly fishing river, you cannot Tenkara fish.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, because the Fly Guide Association got together and when Tenkara started getting popular and made the state redefine fly fishing as
that is funny.
The rod, the artificial fly, and the reel combo. All three things together. Otherwise, it's not fly fishing.
I don't know what that all went down to, how that all came to be, but that seems just a little extreme for me. I mean, it seems like, a little bit of wasted time. Like,
if you want to know why people call fly guys snobs, it's right there.
That's what I mean. And that's what I mean. Not everybody's like that, because that just seems like kind of a bureaucracy sort of thing, making that call.
Who cares? They also, they're also so powerful. Like the New Hampshire, we outlawed lead sinkers below 1 ounce and split shots below 1 ounce and jigs below 1 ounce, except for flies. Lead is legal in flies, but not.
No way.
Yeah, because that they're so powerful.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and you know, fly guys never lose lures.
Yeah, right.
So. Yeah. All right. So Rich Collins, who is our fly fishing correspondent, he was a contributor to the show. You'll hear him later in this show.
Uh-huh.
Not catching fish when I fish with my mom this week. But I'm going to read here what he wrote. I would legitimately like to better understand a swing technique for, say, steelhead, which is perfect for you to answer. I believe the concept is to allow a nymph or a streamer or bead to bump along the bottom in the current. When the line begins to tighten, the fly will rise much like a nymph would rise to the surface to hatch. An upward swing causes the fly to lift up in the water column towards the surface. It's a very natural-looking presentation of a hatching bug. However, why do some fish only take on a swing, and why do some fish only take a swing when it's put exactly in the tip of their nose? Aggression bite? Question mark. I get confused between the idea of mimicking the natural insect life and the stuff I see in New York and the salmon rivers, which is one small step from snagging a fish in the lip by planting the fly right under their kisser. They get mad at it and bite at it, and then everyone prays they set the hook. So I guess I'm asking, as it pertains to swinging flies, are the fish being fooled by a natural presentation, or are they being irritated to strike by a foreign influence in their face? I know a swing of a fly can be deadly from the rising action, but I swear that salmon on their runs aren't thinking about eating much at all. I would love to know the difference. All right.
Yep. Yep. That, you know what? I'm going to give you the answer there is that they're both correct.
Yeah.
Because, and it depends, you know, nobody likes to hear the depends, but you know, the thing about steelhead is it depends, because it depends on how long the fish is in the river, because, and it depends on where you are, because if you're talking about summer steelhead like we have out here, these fish come in and they're in the river for a long time. And in that time, the longer they're in the river, the more they become like trout. So if you catch them like right away when they first get in, they might not be into trout type flies. But if they're in there for like 6 months, all of a sudden they're kind of into it, right? They're kind of becoming back to they are trout. You know, these are trout, they're rainbow trout. So
they have to practice being animals again.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what we get in. But, you know, different from that, like out in some of the other areas, East Coast and that stuff, you have these fish. It's kind of a totally different thing. And then you throw in water temperatures. The cooler the water temperature, the more you got to get down to the fish, because they're not going to rise up to a fly that's swinging on the top necessarily. So you got to use a sinking line that's swinging down to them. And I've had some really good episodes with a couple of Great Lakes guys that talked about how they get down to some of the rivers out in the Great Lakes out of Michigan. And they basically, you got to use really heavy lines and you got to get down to these fish because they're not going to move that much. So, but you know, out of irritation, yeah. I mean, if these fish, they're interested, something swinging in front of their face. And I'll give you a good example of what happens. This is especially if you've never summer steelhead fished before, this is why it's so addicting, because you'll swing your fly down and sometimes you're using little tiny flies for steelhead, like size 8s, even smaller. And this fly will swing on the surface, just in the surface film, and that steelhead will come up from its lie down below and come up and just touch it with its mouth, like checking it out. Mm-hmm. And what that will feel like on your line is a tap. Like somebody's just tapping you, you know, like if somebody tapped you barely on the shoulder. And like, if you don't know what it is, you would never even know that was a fish, but it's a steelhead because you just know it's a steelhead. So if you put that same exact cast back directly on that fish, it might come up and tap it again. But you know, I won't say 9 times out of 10, but the majority of time when I get the same cast and put it back, it might be the fourth cast, but that fish will hook up and it'll just slam it.
So it tested, and then the food comes back, and then it takes the bite, commits. John King is a fishing lure maker. He makes lead-free glass water lures, sponsor of this week's show, actually. He's also one of our correspondents. But he makes these really cool big lures. And he ties, you know, fly materials onto them. So, but he's also a big fly fisher. So he's from Kansas also. So John says, how about some beginner questions? I'm not going to make you do this, but he wants to know 5 favorite must-have wet flies. So I'm going to say, what's your favorite wet fly?
Yeah. So my favorite wet fly, and this is kind of a weird, I mean, I'll kind of give you 2 just because I have one that's a tied down caddis, basically. A lot of people maybe haven't thought of that one, but it's a tied down, but just uses a peacock body. And that's one we've used for years. And you could swing that one just like you swing a soft tackle. But I, you know, soft tackles are the other ones you have to throw in there because there's so many variations and that goes back so far and soft tackles. And that's, so those two are kind of those are go-tos for sure.
All right. And so they says the coachman, the coachman, one of the oldest and still one of the best, for example, what's your favorite rod material? What are your sticks made of?
Yeah. So I'm all pretty much graphite. I'm not a big like rod nerd. Maybe I'll get there eventually, but I mean, I'm just more talking to people. I know that, you know, glass is back. It's got a different feel. And bamboo, of course, you know, you gotta love catching fish on a bamboo rod. I'm all graphite. I'm just kind of a working man's guy. You know, I've got my rods that I use, and, you know, maybe eventually I'll get there, but I think that, you know, the key is finding a stick that feels good in your hand. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. And then for me, it's like whatever costs $30.
Exactly.
So John Garrett quotes one of his fly fishing guru peers, McClure, who said, "A fly rod needs a very good reason to be under 8 feet or over 9. Agree?
A good reason. I think that definitely I have lots of rods that are over 9 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with steelhead fishing, especially, I mean, the spay thing has become, you know,
the spay is like a two-handed casting.
Yeah, two-handed casting.
I know a few things, yeah.
Yeah, so the spay rod is a two-handed, and some of those are up to, you know, I mean, some of the old ones are like 16 feet long, but a lot of them are like 12 feet, mm-hmm. 11, 12, 13 feet. But there's also like the trout spay is getting kind of popular in fly fishing too, so people are actually using longer rods for trout as well. But I think it's just like controlling of your fly, you know, a longer rod can help, especially like I mentioned, Euro nymphing, they're using longer rods there. So I think that the argument to go over 9 feet is, I don't think you have to make as much of an argument. Under 8 feet, I've never used too many of the small rods, but I think if you're in a small trout stream, small fish, then it probably is, it's helpful.
Just switch to Tenkara. So I'm not going to read the rest of his question, but John can go on for days.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to learn how to be a trolling fisherman. I'm trolling where I fish. It's trolling for lake trout and Atlantic salmon, and they're down like 40 feet or deep waters. And a lot of trolling guys use fly rods, dragging a streamer behind the boat, a gray ghost, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Is that still fly fishing if you're not casting?
Yeah, that is fly fishing because you are still casting. I mean, a lot of times you'll have to pull it up and cast to a different area and then you troll. Mm-hmm. But it's funny because I interviewed Phil Rowley, who's a big stillwater guy up in Canada. And he's been on a recent episode, and I'm actually going to have him on a live webinar to talk about some of his flies that he's tied. But yeah, I asked him that question. He basically said he doesn't troll at all. Mm-hmm. Because he just loves anchoring up and fishing his techniques. But no, I mean, trolling is fly fishing because you still do some fly fishing. And I think especially for people that are new to it, it's a great way to catch fish.
Well, and I'll tell you what, like, I don't care who you are, catching a fish on a 9-foot rod is super fun because that bends like you wouldn't believe. So it's a ton of fun. All right. This episode is brought to you by you, our listeners over at patreon.com. If you want to support our show, we're asking listeners to give us $1 an episode. That's $4 a month. Just go to Patreon, patreon.com/fishnerds. Click on the support and give us $1 an episode. So every time I put a show out, you get charged $1. No one will notice it. Like at $4 a month, insignificant. But if all of our listeners do that, I can quit my job and be a full-time podcaster, which is would be amazing. And if you give us at, you know, higher levels, let's say $5 an episode, I'll send you a fish nerd hat. If you give us $25 an episode, which is a lot of money, and most people can't do that, that's our sponsorship level. And I'll mention your business. Our friend Josh Lopes at LopesTax.com, LopesTax.com does that. And people go to him for taxes and for their accounting, and he gives us money. And I took him fishing the other day, and his kid caught fish. So it was a miracle. We had a little summertime miracle. So patreon.com/fishnerds to support us.
Hello, Fish Nerd Nation. This is John King, the crappie hippie, founder of Glasswater Lead-Free Lures. And in honor of the great time we had doing episode 203, we are offering Fish Nerd Nation a special deal. You go to our website, glasswaterleadfreelures.com, enter the coupon code FISHNERD, that's capital F, small ISHNERD, all one word, fish nerd, and you get 20% off your entire order. That includes our incredible new lure, Angle King. Thank you to Clay for giving us a forum for lead-free fishing discussion, and thanks to everybody for sharing the podcast and all the kind words. This is Crappie Hippie wishing you tight lines and Valentine's. Peace out.
All right, next up, I got a call today from George Cannon. Now, George is a 74-year-old prostate cancer survivor from New Jersey. He I don't think he's ever heard a podcast, or I'm not even sure he knows what a podcast is. However, he agreed to come on the show. This is this month, September, is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and so he wanted to share his stories about how he overcame prostate cancer and how he's having a relatively normal old man life, and what he did. Now, September, incidentally, is also Leukemia Awareness Month, and one of our listeners who's been with us a long time is a leukemia survivor, Ryan Dubay, so I don't want to ignore other cancers. There are too many kinds of cancers. There's so many cancers. I hate them. But here's our interview with George Cannon, and if you want more information on how he found his cure, you can go to procure.com. All right, fish nerds, we're hanging out on the phone with our new friend George Cannon, who is an angler, and more importantly, he's a cancer survivor. And I guess September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and so it makes sense to lead in this month with a chat with our friend George. And George, you're an old guy from New Jersey who fishes and has cancer. Is that right?
You got me.
Nailed it. We're done.
And going to be 75 this month, so I don't. That's old.
It's older than some, but younger than others.
I hope everybody makes it.
I hope so.
And done a lot of fishing.
Yeah. So before we get into the cancer story, and we want to talk about that, tell us about your fishing history. You love tuna fishing. You've got a background in competitive fishing. What's that like?
Yeah. Well, I've been fishing since early 50s. I live on the water down in Barnegat Bay, Toms River, New Jersey.
I'm from Camden, New Jersey.
Okay. And yeah. my first major tournament that I went was in Cape May, Mid-Atlantic 500,000.
Nice.
And I was hooked on tuna fishing, caused myself to go by a 38-foot sports fisherman made by a local builder, Henrique's. Anyway, I went down there and started in competitive fishing. We always were fairly active in tuna fishing. And out of the first 5 years, we were fortunate enough to come in third. But with the Calcuttas and all that, it was just about $60,000 we won.
$60,000?
$60,000.
And then that was back in 1950s.
That was 1992, 93.
Oh, okay. So relatively recent, last 20-some-odd years.
Yeah. I heard that this past year that tuna might have brought in $1.5 million pot. It is. I went down in my new Henrique's, and as I backed into the slip, I was the dinghy of the tournament.
You're the smaller
boat. There are a lot of wealthy people in this world.
Well, it's obscene. Those big fishing boats now are owned by bigger corporations and not by individuals, and it's a whole different game than it used to be.
Yes, it is. But anyway, I was hooked on tuna fishing and continued. We were fairly good at it, and I guess for the next 10 or 12 years, I went offshore tuna fishing twice a week from July probably through October, where in the last few years, I actually learned enough about tuna fishing and how to prepare them when they're caught that I would sell them to the Japanese buyers.
Oh, perfect.
And so everything was tuna fish. And life was good. And then I got burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
And my crew got all full-time jobs and couldn't respond in an hour. And
when you know the bite is on, you call your crew and you're like, get on the boat now. We got to go right now.
Everybody. We were all hooked on it. So, they left their job. I'd go down to the marina. My boat would be running. It would be gassed, iced. The poles would be out. The refrigerator would be stocked. And off we go. And so we had a heck of a great run there for a while. And still enjoy it, but not as much as I used to. And it's not as good as it used to be either.
Yeah. So now you're like a cancer spokesperson. You went from being a fisher person. Now I'm getting calls from booking agents who are saying, hey, Clay, I got this guy who's got cancer. He wants to come on your show. And I'm like, okay.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Let's talk to him. So you're talking about your prostate cancer history.
Right.
Tell us about...
I've been, you know, I've been ignoring. This is a test called a PSA test. You get it in your blood. And I just kept having it done every year, but my PSA would gradually go up. And again, being ignorant, I ignored it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we tend to do that, don't we?
Yeah, we all do. And then if you ask other people that don't have the proper information, they always say, oh, yeah, that doesn't mean anything. There's a lot of false negatives. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Well, eventually mine got so high that I says, okay, my doctor said, you got to do something. So I'm a pretty knowledgeable person about medical treatment. So I chose John Hopkins, which is the world's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Went down there. He did a quick exam. He turned around. He had written a book also. And he says, congratulations. He's, I can tell you, you got cancer.
Oh, hooray.
So I said, boy, am I lucky, that. You know?
Yeah.
So the next thing you do is you have to get a biopsy, which, you know, most men get pushed away from it, from fear, from misinformation, whatever. But
right.
That's the Ego. Only way they can attest. Mm-hmm. That's the only way they can prove whether you have cancer or do not. So I had the biopsy, and they rate the biopsy by a thing called a Gleason score.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes from 1 to 10. And they take samples of your little prostate to see if it's localized and how bad it is. So lucky me, I got 9s every place they looked.
Well, at least you know for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't get much higher.
You know, that sucks, and, man. I'm sorry.
You know, so the news was not great.
No.
I'm a pretty relaxed type of person. I'm not going to jump off the bridge, you know. So it is what it is. The next thing is, how do you treat it? And also, you have two options. You can have radiation or you can have surgery. And I said, well, I'm not interested in surgery, so we'll go radiation. Then the next thing is, you have to teach yourself, because all the hospitals want you. There's a big ticket dollar for them.
Yep.
And I found that from what I could explore, that proton radiation was the best.
So proton radiation. And so you went to, was it Procure?
So I went to a company called Procure in Somerset, New Jersey. And there's only 14 of them in the United States. And the reason the major hospitals don't have it, cost up to a couple of $100 million to put it established.
You're kidding. Gosh, cancer treatment is so expensive. Oh, my God.
So, you know, I wasn't happy. So I went up there. And they said, okay, yeah, we have your medical records. You've got 9 on your Gleason score all over. He says, so yeah, you have no choice. We have to start doing your radiation therapy. And they said, you need 44 different shots of this radiation. It takes a minute or two per procedure. So for 44 days or for 9 weeks, Monday to Friday, I drove up there. And they gave me this radiation treatment. I started to look, they run this place so darn well, I started to look forward to
going
there.
Were you able to drive yourself, or did it, like, so I know people, some people I know with radiation, no, they get really sick afterwards, they can't drive themselves.
Not on this, no, not with, there's no effect, I had zero effect. I have no ill effects from the radiation. My prostate has been working the way it used to, because, yeah, I'm just like I was 25 years ago.
That's amazing.
And I'm taking some medication, but other than that, I feel fine.
Let me ask you, what is your Gleason score now?
They don't bother even doing that.
In other words, congratulations. It's amazing.
Yeah. And
it is so rotten. Well, congratulations on getting through it. Now, do you have like a takeaway? Like if you're talking to someone, what would you say to someone who is not thinking in terms of, I could get prostate cancer? What would you say to that person?
Okay. You can also forget it and let it grow to a 9, or you can have it analyzed when your score is a 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, which is very minor. And it's very easy for them.
Well, congratulations on beating it. My father-in-law is a prostate cancer survivor. So
good for him.
It's in our world. I think everybody in our lives, we all deal with cancer in our lives. It affects everybody. If we don't get it, our friends or family get it. So, you know, you're out here spreading the word. So I'm going to go back up one more thing, because this is a fishing podcast.
Sure.
Have you been fishing recently?
Yesterday.
Yeah, well, cool. What'd you go for?
What small bluefish. Bluefish.
Oh, man. Snappers?
Yeah. Took my grandkids and my son. We went 200 feet in front of my house.
That's the way it should be. Do you eat them?
No, I do not.
Really?
They're a little too strong for bluefish for me.
One of my favorites.
I was spoiled by fluke. Spoiled by fluke and tuna.
I can see that how you become spoiled with that. I still always loved eating bluefish. And in New Jersey, we also used to catch weakfish a lot. Do you go for weakfish?
Yes, we do. Yeah, the weakfish will start turning a little better through the month of September.
Right, and those are
good.
Yeah, they're so delicious and so fun to catch.
Yeah, they're great.
Snaggly.
Yeah,
I love them.
Yeah.
All right. So people can look up and they can go to procure.com and learn more about your treatment. And are you on social media? Are you anywhere people can follow along with your story? Or are you just...
Not really. I'm sort of private, but on something like this, I don't mind talking about it.
Well, you know, who knows? You never know. You might say something to the right person and your words could save a life. So we appreciate
it. Get a PSA test, and if it keeps growing, get a biopsy. And the biopsy is going to tell you whether you have cancer. And if you have cancer, go to Procure.
All right. Do you have a mom?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, everyone does, right?
Yeah.
Does your mom fish?
She used to, and she doesn't now.
What happened? Yeah.
You know, I think she may have caught too many fish. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because my stepmom, Lynette, who I call my mom because she did all the job of mom and essentially is my mom, she taught me to fish when I was a kid in New York City, fishing in off of Governor's Island right in Manhattan. So we used to catch striped bass and bluefish right there. And she would eat. Her catch and release is not part of her world.
No.
You know, she's catch and kill. And so even as a kid, she would catch bluefish in lower Manhattan. This is in the 80s when the river was as gross as it can be.
Oh.
I remember one time she caught this huge bluefish right off the seawall and she filleted it. She cooked it, put it on the plate, and it looked like an oil spill happened on my plate. You can see
a glow
of oil coming out of that fish.
Wow.
Yeah, but she's old now. Just turned 65, so she's just she came up here for her birthday this weekend. So we took her fishing.
Wow!
And have you taken your mom fishing as an adult?
You know, I haven't really. No, I haven't.
That's a whole other experience. You should totally do it.
Yeah.
Before she's gone, and so I took her fishing on our boat, and Rich Collins, our fly fishing correspondent, came along, and every time we tried to push record, she caught a fish. So we have actually live footage of her catching fish and Rich and I catching nothing. Also on this segment, you're going to hear my kid, Zoe, who's 11. Hopefully it's a fun little quick sample of where it's like to go on the Fish Nerds fishing barge. And if you want to book a fishing trip with me, you can go to fishnerds.com and I'll take you fishing if you pay me.
Yeah. I'm in.
22.
All right, Fish Nerds. We're on Silver Lake this morning on the boat on the fishing beast today. We're on the lake with no fish. We're on Silver Lake. Actually, there's a bunch of fish under the boat now.
No,
yeah, right there.
Yes, there is.
Just sitting right there. We've been trolling out here for nigh on 7 hours, and barely seen a fish on the sonar. But with me today, we got Rich Collins. Say hi, Rich.
Hey, I saw the sunrise, but no fish.
We have Zoe, my daughter. Say hi, Zoe.
Hi.
Hi.
And we have Lynette Groves, my mom. Say hi.
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 And we have Ruthie. Say, hey, what do you think about fishing in New Hampshire so far? How many fish have you caught?
I had one.
What kind of fish was it?
It was a bass.
It was a bass. What kind of bass?
What was it, a small bass?
It was a big smallmouth bass. Yeah, we were on Lake Winnipesaukee yesterday and barely fished. So today we're on Silver Lake and
marked a fish.
I know, we're starting to mark fish, and we've been fishing for a long time, trolling, which is not our say it again, Zoe.
Trolling doesn't work.
Yeah, trolling works for some people in some instances, and there are people every day trolling back and forth across this lake, and so we're trying to get some action today. Rich, what are your thoughts so far?
Trolling works when you have beer and you have time to kill.
Right, and we have neither. So we're actually going to troll for another half a mile, and then we're going to switch up to bass fishing because we want to catch some fish.
What do you think, Zoe?
I think there's no fish in this lake. I've caught two fish in my life on this lake, so... There's no fish.
It's a long life of fishing.
Yeah.
Yet here we are again.
I'm convinced this lake has a secret, and I am going to put the time in and figure it out. I also know, Rich, that there is the lake whitefish live on this lake.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm after that one too. And it's kind of like my one fish we need to catch.
Someone caught that they brought from home
because they had a home aquarium of lake whitefish.
The only illegal stocking that doesn't work is in this lake.
Now, Rich just got back from fishing. Where were you fishing?
I was fishing the Lamar Valley in Yellowstone National Park.
Cool. And what were you fishing? What were you targeting out there?
Cutthroat trout and cutthroat trout.
Did you get any cut bows or just cutthroats?
You know, I caught one fish. It was smaller than the rest. It gave the biggest, best fight of any fish I've caught all year. I got in. I was so proud. I was like, that fish gave a great fight. Took some pictures. Thought about it later, and that was the rainbow. I got one rainbow. You're supposed to kill them instantly because they're invasive, and it was my favorite fish.
Did you kill it?
I did not. They said, when in doubt, let it go.
Mm-hmm. They used no for sure. And do you eat rainbows, Mom?
No, I do not eat rainbow trout.
Why?
Because it's soft, mushy, nasty. There's a fish.
Oh, fish on! Get up, get it.
No, there isn't.
Yes! All right, Rich, you're on net duty. Oh, Zoe's on net duty.
Where's the net?
Yep, nice and steady retrieve on that one. Turn it over. There you go.
I
land. Oh, boy.
Cowabunga.
Ha-ha! Zoe's doing the net business. How's the fight going so far?
It's going good.
Yeah?
Yep.
Good.
Oh,
it's going to jump. Uh-oh. It's a good one. Are we?
Here it comes in the water. I see it. It's a bullhead.
Oh, my goodness.
What is it?
It's a trout of some sort. It's a rainbow. Hey.
Woo. You're in the net.
Hey. Oh. Oh, what are we getting on? What lure, Zoe?
Wonder Bread.
Wow. We did it.
How do you think of that, Rich?
You persevered. I would have quit like 3 hours ago.
Suck on that, Silver Lake.
A beauty.
All right, let's take some pictures. Let it go. All right. Do you eat fish?
Yes.
You do. And do you ever, like, when you're fishing, are you a strict catch-release fly guy, or do you sometimes keep the fish you catch?
No, I mean, I think with steelhead, we have a lot of hatchery fish. So, yeah, definitely. I just got a couple this weekend, and they are awesome. So, I love fish.
Yeah, they're so fun. So we have a segment on the show called Killing Fish in Time with Hugo. And we love Hugo. He's our resident seagull. He eats anything. I mean, he's like into balut and, you know, he'll eat live octopuses, all that kind of stuff. And he's an amazing photographer. He runs a Facebook group called The Culinary Connection. But this week he is talking about fishing and eating crappies. Do you crappie fish out west?
Ooh, we do have some. I haven't done in a while.
Oh, it's actually my most successful fish on the fly has been crappie. I just have so much fun on a fly.
Hey, Fish Nerd friends, Hugo Medeiros here, cooking correspondent for the Fish Nerds, checking in here with a quick update for you guys. I was out this morning in my kayak, and I caught a beautiful crappie. Some people call them calico, the crappie. They're supposed to be great eating. I know I've eaten them before, but it's been a while. Can't remember how I liked them. So I'm having a dilemma with my freshwater fish. As I mentioned in one of the other podcasts, I'm kind of stuck fishing in fresh water for now because I got all these rotator cuff issues and stuff, so I got to take it easy. And I don't know if I just got spoiled to having fresh ocean fish in my fridge most of the time this year and even last year. The last one I caught and I talked about with you guys was a big brown trout I got. Well, big. He was nice. Beautiful fish. He was like 2 pounds, maybe 21, 22 inches. And he looked gorgeous. And I said, you know what? This is a trout. I've cooked hundreds and hundreds of rainbows and browns and Lakers before. I love them. So I brought it home. I mentioned the sauce I made in the other podcast. This beautiful concoction of cilantro and olive oil and garlic and salt and pepper, all pureed in a food processor. And sat down with my wife. Well, I had that marinade dressing thing all inside and rubbed all over it. It sat in the fridge for a couple hours like that. I was so excited. I cooked it up on the grill, made it really nice, had the skin nice and charred. And we sat down to eat. And I also made these the shrimp. I told you guys I love the pink shrimp, the wild shrimp. So we have those and garlic butter. We have the fish. I was pumped. So we go to dig into it, and I look at my wife, and I go, what do you think of the trout? She goes, I'm not going to eat it. After she tasted it. And my wife is not picky. And, well, you guys know me, too. I eat everything. Something about it, I don't know. For me, for it to be tough, it's tough. And I don't know what it was. Like I said, I've eaten so many trout in the past, but it was just, the consistency was soft. And it was just tasted like muddy water, despite all that beautiful seasoning it had to it. So we did not eat that, and we stuck to the shrimp. So this morning, we're going to see, I just finished, I caught that crappie early this morning. Had a great time. I'm going out super early in the morning. I get up real early, like 3:30 or 4, usually on the weekdays. And I head out for a couple hours on the kayak before work and the local ponds and lakes that I got. It's big crappie. Figured, well, I know these are supposed to be good. We're going to give it a shot. All right, so let's see. Hopefully I won't have to run to the store and buy a sub for lunch. Here we go. Oh, actually, this is really good. So I just did a... it's real simple. Doing this for a quick lunch before I have to get to work. I did a McCormick's fish fry seasoning mix. Just sprinkled that on there and quickly pan fried it. No, I don't think anybody can complain about this. It's nice white fillets, nice texture, very delicious. So I may have to... rethink my plans about freshwater fish, but this is delicious. That brown trout was nasty, but who knows? Maybe it's whatever it was eating, or it's really hot in late summer here in New England. But wanted to give you guys an update. Maybe I can redeem the freshwater fish for myself before I get back out in the ocean. Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
Fish guy Josh is back. He is got a new segment just started last week, and we're going to try it again called Fish Guy Follows. And it's all about who he likes on Instagram and Facebook and the Twitters and all those places. And he's a super nerd. He's always following all these guys. If you want to follow him, go to at Fish Guy Josh on Instagram, and you can see all his nerdy pictures. He's also, I think, his chapter president of NANFA, the North American Native Fishes Association.
What's his specialty?
Well, he's a fish biologist out in California, and he works for the regional park district out there. And he drives a truck that has a giant aquarium on the back of it. And he does fishy education on the back of a truck.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Huh. He's a very good photographer. He's a scuba diver, and he's just great fun to have on the show.
Yeah.
And he started off as a listener, like just you know, we all of our correspondents started off as fans of the show. And now they are part of the show. I should say it right now. We're looking for more.
That's cool.
So, yeah. So, if anyone listening, if you got a thing and you think, oh, you know what your show needs? It needs an aquarium expert.
Yeah.
Then you're right. We need that person. If it's you, call me or, call me. Call 607-378-FISH and I'll call you back and we'll talk about it and we'll see if it's
the show. So, what do you think are the topics that you've spent most of your time, a majority on this show, kind of covering? Or is it?
That's a good question. Because it's mostly me talking, it's mostly fishing in New Hampshire. Uh-huh. And because that's my world. And that's why I love having other voices, is I want to get people from all over the world, everyone from like chefs and artists and biologists and musicians from all over the place, because fish impact every part of our life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I want more correspondence, because I want to get those stories I can't tell.
Everybody wants to know the what, but Welcome, fellow fish nerds, to the latest edition of Fish Guy Follows with me, your host, Fish Guy Josh, where we take a look at some of the fishiest things in social media, including Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you name it, we cover it. So hang on tight while the rest of this song rocks your face off, and then sit back and relax. It's time for Fish Guy Follows.
I'm excited, mostly because of that awesome music. Once again, thanks to my good friend Jan and all my other musical buddies down in Louisiana. Some of the coolest musicians I know. It was so awesome of them to make that intro music for me. I'm pumped every time I hear it. It really gets me excited for the segment. So, speaking of segments, let's jump right in, shall we? Today, we're going to cover YouTube's Hank Patterson. That's Hank, H-A-N-K, and Patterson, P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N. You can find his page on YouTube. If you are into fly fishing, you probably know Hank Patterson, or maybe you don't. And if you don't, you really should. And even if you're not into fly fishing, you don't have to be a fly fisherman to enjoy these videos. They are fantastic. Essentially, Hank Patterson is a fictitious fly fishing guide, self-proclaimed world's best fly fishing guide, as a matter of fact. These videos are different segments of him and sometimes him and his clients and them training us on how to be better fly fishermen. He also has a couple of feature-length films he made, including Real Montana Adventure and Mystery of the Cutty Rain Brown. He also has a one of his latest projects, Amazon Prime. He did an episodic show called Camp Hoggada Doggada, which sounds ridiculous, but if you watch some of these videos, it's all going to make sense to you. And any weird references I make, you're going to suddenly get. It's an interesting story as far as the start of Hank Patterson. He started doing YouTube videos. It's been a few years now he's been doing this. It actually all started with him and his good, this guy, Travis, who's the actor that plays Hank Patterson, and his good friend Reese decided to make the first Hank Patterson film to enter into a fly fishing video contest in the comedy section. They thought they had a shot. There wouldn't be a lot of entries, so they were going to go for it. And they won. And from there, it just kind of blew up, and they started creating more and more videos. Most of the early videos are Travis and Reese playing Hank and his favorite client, Crazy Reese, who's kind of the straight man of the group. Some of the stuff that Hank does in these videos is just freaking hilarious. Start at the beginning, the first video, meet Hank Patterson, your fly fishing guide. And if you know anything about fly fishing and how serious fly fishermen can take themselves sometimes, you're going to just absolutely love Hank Patterson. Some of the videos are, you know, 12, 15 minutes long. Some are 4 or 5 minutes. Some are just a few moments. And they're all fantastic. Extremely goofy. He's got a webpage, hankpatterson.com, and you can get some awesome swag there. A lot of cool shirts and hats. His Day Drinker hat, Paralyzer to the Chode, Menage a Midge. All these may be foreign to you right now, but like I said, watch a few of those first videos and you'll start laughing at all those terms next time you hear them. It's kind of an interesting story besides the fact that, you know, this all started on them doing a contest and just seeing if they could win the GoPro camera that was up for grabs, as well as $1,000 prize money. But there's sort of this really cool underlying meaningful reason for why they do this is, you know, they first entered this contest so they could use the prize money to make a film about real recovery. Real recovery was the real reason they even made Hank Patterson. It was just sort of a means to an end to get that other film rolling. Now, that film is about, like I said, real recovery, which is, I don't know all the details of it, but basically it's fly fishing trips up in Idaho, where these guys are from, for people who are suffering from cancer. And unfortunately, one of the reasons they started this was because Reese had a very long battle with cancer, and his experience at Real Recovery was so moving that they felt like they wanted to make a film about this. But like I said, Hank Patterson just kind of started blowing up on YouTube, and they actually got sponsored by Orvis, a couple other companies, and really got moving. Jeez, I think almost 5 years ago now is when it started, and they're still making videos now. Product goes up and up each time. Sometimes there's a little bit of a gap between films. However, you can follow Hank Patterson also on Instagram, which is just Hank Patterson, one word. Again, that's HANKPATTERSON. All of the Instagram photos are basically taken and posted and narrated from the perspective of Hank Patterson. The actor himself is not part of the social media or the video. You're never going to hear the name Travis except for articles about the show or when he gets real and starts talking about Reese and the work they do with cancer stuff. It is a bummer, and a spoiler alert here. If you don't want to hear about this, want to watch the videos, go ahead and mute now. But unfortunately, Reese eventually passed away from his battle with cancer. And it was a really moving speech that Hank/Travis gave about his friend when he did pass away. And he actually, as his battle with cancer got a little harder on him, he stopped being in the videos, and the videos continued on. But Travis will tell you that he's been quoted many times as saying, you know, the idea was always Reese's, and without Reese, it wouldn't have been possible. Even when he wasn't on camera anymore, he was still trying to be part of it. And so, like I said, there's sort of this warm, good vibe that goes along with what seems like on the outside such an utterly ridiculous show. Really cool stuff. You can buy his movies on his webpage. Like I said, you can buy his gear on his webpage. But do yourself a favor and just start off on YouTube, Hank Patterson. If you like it, give him a subscribe. I really think you'll enjoy it. If you know, like I said, anything about fly fishing or fishing guides, anything of that nature, I think you're going to really have a good time. Check it out, Hank Patterson. News, news, fish in the news.
Everybody loves their fish in the news. I love fish in the news.
Everybody loves a fish in the news. Before we jump into the news, Doc Martin is back. We do a series of fake fish in the news where she reads me a news story, and I tell you, the listeners, whether I think it's true or false, whether it's fake news or real news. If you want to follow Doc Martin, just go join the Fish Nerds podcast group, and you can chat with her there. She'll ignore you everywhere else.
Boop, recording.
Okay. So Clint Eastwood and Ron Howard and Matthew McConaughey decide to make a movie together. Clint Eastwood said, I'm going to act. And Ron Howard said, I'll direct. And Matthew McConaughey said, all right.
Boo. Boo. It's terrible.
You've heard that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what Matthew McConaughey does.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Why can't Matthew McConaughey go left in a car?
All right.
Yeah, he only turns all right.
Every Matthew McConaughey joke ends with that.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah, that's really funny.
God. Okay.
All right.
So, Clay, what is a fish?
Ooh.
I'm going to start
with
that.
This is a classic question, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, this is one of the, whenever I'm talking, doing fish talks, people who don't know fish, I always start with this question. Because
it's a hard.
Because we can define mammals very easily.
Oh, actually, why don't we define mammals?
Oh, okay.
We're going to get weird here.
We're going to define mammals?
Yeah.
So, I when I'm teaching this to kids, I give them some really basic six things that mammals share, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mammals have teeth,
mm-hmm.
live young,
mm-hmm.
milk,
mm-hmm.
Hair,
mm-hmm.
They have backbones,
mm-hmm.
And they're warm-blooded. So yep. Those are the six things I teach when I do kids. If you can do those six things, if you have all those in common, there's a good bet you're a mammal, right?
Yep.
Okay. Am I wrong?
No.
Okay.
No, yeah, no, I'm agreeing.
I'm always like, because you know more stuff than me, that's where I get nervous.
No.
So then when I do fish, I'll start with that, and I'll say, okay, now define fish. And the kids will raise their hands, and they'll say, all fish have backbones. And I'll go, no. And they'll go, well, all fish have scales. And I'll go, no. All fish have gills. And I'll go, no. all fish are cold-blooded. And I'll go, not really. And, you know, and so fish are much harder to define. And so we define them more as what they're not. They're not all the other things. They are fish.
That's good.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with fish.
Okay, I
can't define them well. Bony fishes, we can get into it, but...
It gets hairier.
Yes.
You're going to appreciate that joke in 5 minutes from now.
I can't wait.
So now we've kind of defined fish-ish. Mm-hmm. And
which is how we define fish.
Yeah, fish-ish.
That's why I love them.
And we've defined mammals. Uh-huh. Okay, they do share a few characteristics.
Sure.
Like backbones and things like that.
Yeah.
Some. So now it brings me to my story.
Uh-huh.
You're going to have to tell me if it's real or fake.
All right.
So this guy from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Fake. I'm just kidding.
There's no men in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin is pretend.
It doesn't exist.
There's no fish there. They just make cheese. That's
Clay's
all I
never
know.
Been there.
It doesn't. Yeah, I have never seen it. It's not real.
Okay. So he has this picture, which I'll show you in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted to share a remarkable catch that he had one afternoon in May of 2015.
Okay, so good. So he's good. Mm-hmm. I like that's recent.
And he was fishing on the Menominee River.
Mm-hmm.
And he caught some trout, packed in a bottleneck. He caught a few that were totally normal, and then he reeled in this one.
Oh, boy.
He's never seen anything like it. He contacted the local wildlife official, and they were over the moon.
Of course.
About how rare this fish was. So it was an extreme case of Saprolegnia.
Saprolegnia. Mm-hmm. So let's take that apart.
Okay.
Sapro, from the Latin term for tree sap. And what's the other sapro?
I think legnia. Legnia. I might be mispronouncing.
Legnia means alleged, meaning lies.
Okay.
Okay.
You're so close. Okay. And so it was so exciting because of this rare, I don't know if this is genetic or an infection. I don't know. But he got it mounted.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was the rare fur-bearing trout.
Mm, now, this is a trout I've seen before.
Oh, okay.
In Maine. In Moosehead, Maine, there is a little shop up there, gift shop, called Camp Camp.
Mm-hmm.
And they have one of these mounted on the wall, and it's called a fur-bearing trout. Mm-hmm. And it was caught in the 1920s. And it's right next to the jackalope mount.
Oh,
it's right on the same wall, and I had to take it down. I got to touch it, and it felt very real to me.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know from the Varmints podcast, jackalope are real.
Oh,
they tend to explode if they get wet, and there's all kinds of things you got to worry about with jackalopes.
Gotcha.
However, is this real? And so, have you heard of black hairy tongue syndrome?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we're going to pay a toll right now. You've heard of black hairy tongue? By listeners who have not heard of black hairy tongue, do not Google black hairy tongue syndrome. It's a bacterial infection that you can get in your tongue that you grow black hair, but the hair is just a fungus.
And for the record, the Saprolegnia, that's a real thing that trout do get.
Really?
Yes,
so
that's
real. What is that?
It is, I don't know, I think it's some kind of infection. I don't know if it's like a mold or a bacterial infection, but like the black hairy tongue, it's related somehow to that. But basically it grows on the outside of the fish.
Right, so the question we're going to answer today, is the fur-bearing trout news real news?
Right.
And I'm thinking I want this to be real.
Okay.
I would love it to be real.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go with, you know, here's the question. Do I want to be right or do I want to be made fun of? So,
oh, but why not both?
Why not? I'm going to be, no matter what, I'm getting made. It's pretend. Mm-hmm. Full on pretend. But I conceptually love it. Like, I love it like I love the jackalope.
So we're going to go with fake news?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
It's completely fake. And actually, the actual disease, right, the saprolegnia.
Hang on, we're paying a toll.
Okay.
Paying a toll.
Pause.
Hi there. Good morning.
Thank you.
Why do I say thank you when I give people money?
Well, they let you through.
Let me drive on your road. Here's a dollar.
Okay, so the actual disease that they have, it does affect fish, but it doesn't actually look anything like fur. It just kind of looks like a white discoloration, so it's not fuzzy at all.
Yeah, I think I've seen it. Is it a fungal?
I don't know. It doesn't say here.
So I've seen fish with this kind of description on them, and it looks like fungus to me.
Yeah.
It looks like an athlete's foot type.
That's what I would guess, but I don't have it in front of me, so I can't say with conviction. Probably fungi or bacteria. Those are the common things.
Yeah, but I do love fur-bearing trout, and I have seen them mm-hmm. with my eyes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some pictures here. Like, I'm looking at them.
I've touched them.
Yeah, there's one mounted on a wall in Wisconsin.
Yeah, man, I'll have to dig through my archive. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in the Fish Nerds newsfeed, there's a picture of the fur-bearing trout from Maine.
But it is absolutely fake, and most of them are covered in rabbit fur.
That's where they went wrong.
Yeah,
different kind of fur. People believe it. Like, if you were to put an animal fur on fish, what do you think would be the most appropriate?
Actually, what I would use is the bird, the kiwi, because that already looks a lot like fur, but it's actually feathers.
Feathers. Now, feathers on a fish I would find more believable, you know, because of modified scale or something
exactly.
like that.
So that's what I would pick.
Yeah. God, are there any examples of fish that have feathers?
I'd say, like, the closest would have to be like a flying fish.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of feathery, but that's not the same.
Yeah,
because that's like an appendage.
Yeah, curious. I bet no. But I wonder if there's like anything
like
in
like a leafy sea dragon. They have those projections.
Yeah, and some of these fish look... Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, fish look weird, dude.
They're totally weird.
But I don't... I mean, you can't call them feathers.
No, we couldn't. So, you would be a very bad fish scientist if you did that. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, it's got feathers. It's a rooster fish.
Perfect.
Perfect. Cock-a-doodle-doo. All right. Thanks, Doc.
Yep.
First up. This is from Barstool Sports. And this is for real news, by the way. This is not fake news, but it's a great headline. Police shut down a Kuwaiti fish market after they were caught using googly eyes to make the fish appear more fresh. So Kuwait police have shut down this thing. So basically, it's not really a story here. This is basically a series of fish pictures with googly eyes. So, you know, when you're at a fish market, how do you tell fish are fresh? What's your go-to?
I just kind of look at the, I mean, you could tell by the flesh.
You can tell by the flesh, but a lot of people say you can tell by the eyes. If the eyes are nice clear, it's a fresh fish.
There you go.
So these guys in Kuwait just put googly eyes on them. So I'll read you the article. How long could this fish store possibly have perpetrated this facade? 15, 20 minutes max. You pick up one of those fish and the eye is sliding right off. Little or no chance these things are staying applied, this slimy dead fish eye. But they got busted. Can you just imagine going to a fish market?
Oh my God.
I'm not going to read the story. It's a dumb story. But but it makes me want to, next time I catch a fish and it dies, stick some googly eyes on there.
Kids would love it.
Oh, it's so funny. It may not be true. Now I'm looking at it a little closer. This may be fake. The Barstool Sports can't be a news source. It can't be real. But I couldn't help but share it. So, but hey, what would you do if you went to a fish market and you saw googly eyes on a fish? Would you buy them?
Maybe. I mean, I think it'd be fun. It'd be entertaining, especially if the kids were there. That's what I mean. And the kids would love it.
If the price is right, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly.
I can deal with some old fish if the eyes are cute.
Yep.
But fun thing to do, by the way, is go to your local craft store and buy a bunch of googly eyes. And then when your family's away, all the pictures on the wall, stick them googly eyes on all the eyes.
Don't
ever mention it. Just do it and deny it forever that you've done it.
I'll tell you, I in my family, I have a hard time keeping up because I'm kind of more the straight one.
Mm-hmm.
My wife just bought a gorilla suit. We were at the kind of the market the other this week, and she found something she couldn't pass up. So she's going to surprise. She said she was going to jump out of the woods, but I told her maybe that's not a good idea to surprise her friends because she might get shot. So,
yeah, probably. Well, I mean, I don't know about Oregon. New Hampshire has a pretty strong gun culture. So is Oregon the same kind of thing? Is there a lot of guns out there?
Lots of guns.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand it, but they're here. They're everywhere. We have a neighbor. We had a bear problem a couple of years ago, and I'm the mayor of our road, Allen Siding Road. So whenever something happens, I'm not really the mayor, but for some reason, I'm the guy who everyone calls. And so there was all these gunshots in the neighborhood, and my phone rings. And it's like, Clay, are you shooting guns? I'm like, yeah, no, I don't have a gun. I don't even own a gun. And they said, well, can you figure out why it's happening? I'm like, well, I'm not really in charge of the neighborhood. So I go knocking on doors because, of course, I have to check it out. And my neighbor opens his door and I said, are you shooting your guns? Oh, yeah, I'm shooting the guns. There's a bear in the backyard trying to eat my chickens.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. And I went, all right, people are calling me about it. He goes, don't worry. I didn't kill the bear. I just wanted to scare him away. And I look down, and right next to his leg is like a I want to say AK-47 or M6.
No way.
I don't know guns.
Yep.
I said, did you use that gun? He goes, oh, no. That's if it comes in the house. again, because right. Bears do break in our houses around here. And I said, oh, okay. Maybe less gunshots might be good for the neighborhood. And he goes, oh, yeah. Oh, is your wife home alone right now? And I said, yeah. He goes, does she have a gun? I said, no. Okay. And he opens up a drawer and he hands me a pistol.
No way.
And I said, what's this for? He goes, oh, give it to your wife and then she can protect herself from the bears.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, yeah, no, this isn't going to work. And I put the gun down. He goes, oh, I get it. Opens another drawer and hands me a smaller gun. It's pink. Under that one, keep it for as long as you want. Don't worry about it.
Really?
But for him, the idea that I didn't need, like, I didn't want a gun. He couldn't connect with that. It was, I just don't have the right gun.
Yep. So, and that's a true story, a pink gun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's New Hampshire.
That's hilarious.
He was super excited about, like, he really wanted to, like, it's like lending a shovel. That's a great shovel.
Oh, yeah. You know?
And to him, it's just a tool. It's his culture. My world, but super nice guy, you know?
No.
When the zombie apocalypse comes,
yeah,
I'm hiding with him.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. He's the guy. He's your best friend.
Exactly. I don't understand. this is from Reed GH News. Red GH. Guy's penis stung by stingray while swimming in the ocean. Guy's penis stung by stingray. While swimming in the ocean. This is why you're only swimming
pants. He deserves it. He deserves it, yes.
I know. If you're swimming naked. All right.
Wow.
So nobody wants to get stung by a stingray. But if you had to protect one part of your body from its barbed tail, then it would be quite possibly be your family jewels.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for one swimmer, a sunny day at the beach turned into a nightmare after a stingray snuck its tail into his shorts, clamping painfully onto his genitals. Oh, he was wearing shorts and everything.
Oh.
I would wear armored shorts. An agonizing incident was filmed, oh God, thank God, on the beach in Sanya in the Henan province of South China and shows the unlikely young man lying on the sand, his face contorted with sheer anguish. The offending stingray lies silently beside quiet stingray. The unnamed holiday maker had reportedly been enjoying a paddle in the sea when he got too close for the stingray. He had ran back to shore while crying out in a completely understandable torment. The footage shows a stung man surrounded by crowds of horrified onlookers, including worried-looking police officers who crouched behind him sympathetically to assess his injuries. God, what a terrible job to have to assess those injuries.
Oh, my God. That's like almost like no comment on that one.
I know. So here's what this says. According to Healthline.com, if you're stung by a stingray, you'll feel immediately severe pain at the wound site. You'll need to begin treating the wound right away if it's superficial. If the barb has punctured your throat, neck, or abdomen or chest, or has pierced completely through part of your body, don't attempt to remove it. Seek emergency attention. Otherwise, remain in the ocean and pull the barb out if you can. Allow the salt water to clean the wound while applying pressure to both slow the bleeding and encourage the venom to come out. My God.
Jeez.
To clear out any additional debris you might see in the cut or puncture while you're still in the water. Try to clear it out. Pay close attention to how you feel in the sting's aftermath. It's possible to have a life-threatening allergic reaction. So, the takeaway here, I don't swim in China? I don't even know.
Yeah.
But here's the question. Would you eat a stingray that injured you?
I would eat anything. I'm kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think that one especially, I would eat. I'd be like, yep, like I'm in pain, but he's coming home.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he owes us. The minimum, the least he can do is pretend to be scallops for a couple hours.
Totally.
Make you feel.
Are stingrays good? Or are they?
They are. In fact, you can, a lot of people, some fish markets will punch out of the wings fake scallops.
Oh, wow.
And pan-sear those in butter, and you're good to go.
There you go.
Yeah, one more news story here from New Hampshire. So that's the news.
Nice.
Yeah, we did some news. So
that was some amazing stories there. is it always this entertaining with the diversity?
Yeah, it's always just important. We do only the most important news stories, okay. The ones that touch your heart the most and warm your insides up. And we almost always talk about penises.
Yeah, the ones that make you cringe. And
we can't help ourselves. Hey, Dave, thanks so much for being part of the show. I'm going to give you the last words. So what's the takeaway? What do you want our listeners to do to help your show or help you out?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's funny because I've been thinking, the last 6 months as this show has been going, like, how do I reach new people and share? And I think this is the best way, just connecting with a new audience. And my whole goal is to teach people, get more people into fly fishing. So I think the best thing is just go over to wetflyswing.com. And if you go to /show, you can check out all the podcast episodes there and just start listening. There's a bunch of good ones. If you're into trout fishing, the recent episodes are all about trout. If you have a question, you can check in with me. If you want to get into fly tying, just go to flytyingmentor.com and you can sign up there, and I'll send out some information on what we have over the next 2 months with that launch. So that's it. You've listened to a bunch of nerds when you should have been fishing. We've touched on penises and all other good stuff. Penises.
Yeah, nice job.
I think we've covered it all.
We've done it. We totally did it. So special thanks to Fish Guy Josh, Doc Martin, Hugo Medeiros, Rich Collins, Ma Groves, Zoe Groves, my daughter, and of course Dave from the Wet Fly Swing Podcast. Go to your Apple Podcast, your Google Play, or yell, "Hey Siri, subscribe to the Wet Fly Swing Podcast now." Give Dave a little love, and also listen to a show. Give him feedback. Dave wants to hear what you think. You know, what do you like about the show? How can he improve? What do you want to hear? Because he needs you to listen.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So, until next time, follow the code of the fish nerds, spawn early and often.
Never trust a free lunch with strings attached.
And swim against the current every chance you get.
You did it, Dave. You made a podcast.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Thanks for being awesome. Part of this. Yeah.
That was fun, man. That was a great show.
Yeah.
Love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast. Now, with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.